And welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser, and we have a fabulous show lined up for you today, as we do every day at 3 p.m. Today is Thursday, March 13th, and before I tell you who our lineup is, I will say that there are orcas in the channel. I'm just going to throw it out there. Today we'll learn about the Juno Symphony Weekend Showcase coming up for this very weekend. Eric Goldsberry will be here to talk to us about St. Baldrick's Day. We'll talk with author Don Reardon about his presentations for the upcoming 49 Writers Group this week. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with us to talk about all the arts going on with Arts Up, Writer's Almanac, and more. Stay tuned. First, National Native News. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Alaska, several people lined up to testify Tuesday before a state house committee on the problems that contribute to high rates of violence against Alaska Native people. KNBA's Jocelyn Estes reports.
A few months ago, the Indian Law and Order Commission issued a report singling out Alaska. Commission Chairman Troy Ide told Alaskan legislators the state's rates of domestic violence and sexual assault are 10 and 12 times the national average. Ide says the commission traced the problem to the state's ineffective and wasteful centralized system and its tense relationship with tribes.
It's in every Alaskan's interest to save that kind of money and to not have an environment where you spend more money litigating against your natives than all the other states in the United States combined.
People testified law and order for Alaska Natives is starved for resources. Tribal judges are unpaid or receive only part-time pay. Village public safety officers act as firemen, police, and search and rescue officers in rural Alaska. VPSO James Holscher of Hooper Bay in western Alaska says he's been provided with a car, office, and housing, three essentials he says many VPSOs are not provided.
If you sat down and you listened to the majority of VPSOs, I think most of us would be surprised to hear what they are not offered or what is not provided to them.
The Alaska House Community and Regional Affairs Committee had invited the state attorney general to attend the hearing, but he had a scheduling conflict. The committee plans to extend another invitation to him to hear his side of the story. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
A tribal employee in Oklahoma has pleaded guilty to federal embezzlement charges. As KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports, the case involves thousands of dollars in fuel purchases.
The U.S. Attorney for Western Oklahoma accused Kyle J. Grip of using his position as a manager with the Kickapoo Tribe's property and supply unit to embezzle more than $20,000. Federal prosecutors say Gibb admitted that from January of 2011 through the end of 2012, he used a Kickapoo Tribe credit card to buy more than $22,000 in gasoline for his personal vehicles. He faces as much as 5 years in prison, 3 years of supervised release, and a fine of $250,000. In a plea agreement, Gibb agreed to pay restitution to the Kickapoo Tribe in the amount of nearly $22,500. Gibb worked for the tribe from July of 2008 through January of 2013. He pleaded guilty in the case last week, and his sentencing is set for June. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
Tribal leaders from across the country are gathered in Washington, D.C. for a legislative summit. Topics this week include advocacy training, the Affordable Care Act, and federal tax issues in Indian Country. Leaders are also meeting with members of Congress and federal officials. The Porch Band of Creek Indians and the University of South Alabama have announced the establishment of a Native American Studies program. It will include highlighting the history and culture of the tribe and others in the Southeast U.S. The Porch Creek Indians are descendants of the Creek Nation of Alabama and Georgia. They were not removed from tribal lands and have lived for nearly 200 years in and around their reservation in Alabama. The tribe is the only federally recognized one in the state. In March 2013, President Obama signed the Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act. Tribal leaders and advocates celebrated its passage as an effort to protect Native women. provisions permit tribal authority to investigate, prosecute, and convict non-Indian offenders who commit sexual assault and domestic violence. Three tribes recently began exercising this authority through a pilot project. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser, and it is Thursday, March 13th. It's about 3:05. And my first guest in the studio today, we have Catherine Wilkins and Lisa Abias, and they're both here from the Juneau Symphony, and they're going to talk about the showcases. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so this is interesting because we're kind of talking before you came, before we came live on air, about kind of the difference between what's happening this weekend as opposed to like a huge symphony show. And Lisa, I was wondering if you could kind of share with the studio or the listening audience what actually that means and what this, how this concert is different.
Well, this is a showcase, and we are showcasing chamber music works. And the chamber music works are for small groups, and I think it, what's really exciting about doing something like this is that we love as musicians to play with others, and we love to, you know, play chamber music because it's just so much fun to get together in a small group and be able to communicate musically and, you know, help each other out with, you know, other things that need, you know, our technique and our musicality and everything. And so it's really, really lots of fun to play chamber music, and we're really excited to bring this, you know, this program.
So before I get to, you know, because I have lots of questions. I love when musicians come on because I get to ask them lots of questions that I always wonder about the symphony. But before we kind of get into some more questions, can we just get the brass tacks as far as what times, where, and when that is happening?
Well, we'll be at the university on Saturday night, and that will be in the Egan Library. Do I know what time it starts? You know, we have to get there hours in advance, and it's almost a detail that...
It starts at 8 p.m.
8 p.m., thank you. And Sunday afternoon we'll be at Northern Light United Church, and that's at 3 p.m.
Oh, great. So yeah. You actually, there's a valley opportunity and a downtown
right,
opportunity.
And it's just the two performances.
Great. So, Catherine, you said that you called yourself the impresario.
I like the Italian title, yeah. Basically, I'm the organizer, producer of this concert. I've done it about five times now, I think. So we've got people from the symphony who have stepped up to the plate and said, you know, that there's pieces they want to perform. And really what's a little bit thrilling, it's a thrilling opportunity this year. We have four chamber works that are going to be performed, and they'll be performed in their entirety. This is a little unusual for us. In past years, we've had chamber music frequently is a salon music. So that might be a song, for example, or poetry set to music. That's a musical poem, put it that way. These are, we have three full-length sonatas, and we're doing all the movements of all the pieces. So frequently when people perform, maybe we have a more crowded schedule, and we say, you know, I can only give you a five-minute time slot or a seven-minute time slot. So they perform one movement. But it worked out here that we're going to have longer pieces performed in their entirety, and I'm really thrilled about that.
I imagine, Lisa, that the musicians really like that too.
Yeah, we do. We like to work up the whole piece. It's you know, the piece takes you through a whole journey, and it's kind of, you know, sometimes it's kind of a bummer when you only get to take the audience through only one part of that journey. And, the pieces are, most of the sonatas, you know, that were written in the time period that I like to play in, you know, are a whole journey through the whole piece, and it takes you from beginning to end, and they're all linked somehow.
Yeah,
right.
And I think that it's great to think of the composer, too. The composer has a vision in their mind, and it's the whole thing, not just one part.
Yeah. So could you talk about some of the pieces that are being played this weekend?
Sure. So first in our program, we have a flute trio by Beethoven.
Yeah.
And then second on our program is a Brahms cello and piano sonata, which I'm excited because I love Brahms. And then third, I'll be third on the program, and I'll be playing a sonata for piano and violin by Edvard Grieg. And then last on our program is a sonata and flute and piano by Lowell Lieberman, played by Sally Schlichting and Mary Watson.
Yeah, so that's interesting because, you know, as we talk about kind of the musicians, I mean, you've got some amazing musicians playing. So did you want to tell us some more?
We can start by mentioning that Lisa Ebius, sitting next to me, is the concertmaster of the Juno Symphony and has an extraordinary performing schedule this spring. What else are you doing? Tell us about the Dvorak.
Yeah, I'm soloing with the symphony on the beginning of April. We're playing a Dvorak romance for violin and orchestra.
Right.
Wow.
So, and she also recently played in the opera. So she just plays all the time. Very, very, yeah, it's extraordinary. We're really lucky to have her doing this piece this weekend. And I just could note, I guess, that the program is in order by birth date of the composers. Brahms and Grieg were, well, they overlapped quite a bit by quite a few years, but Brahms is just 10 years old or so. Anyway, that's the kind of the order of the program. The Brahms piece I could point out, too. Brahms, of course, famous for composing pieces that for piano that are very difficult. And in this piece, I think there's really, it's a virtuoso piano part as well as cello. Yeah, it's really, as Lisa says, really a duet.
Mm-hmm. And that's Sue Kazama is playing that part? Or?
No, that'll be Mary Watson.
That'll be Mary. Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Yeah, Mary Watson and Tyree Peeney on cello, yeah.
Awesome.
Right.
I love actually watching both of them. So
yes, right.
What a great opportunity.
Yeah, we have terrific musicians performing. And the flute trio is the trio group called Flutatious, Sandy Fortier, Stevie Spinka, and Lisa Ray. And this trio was originally written for oboe and English horn, but was rearranged for many, many other instrumentations. And the arrangement for three flutes came out. There's even speculation Beethoven himself might have done it because it was the piece was originally published in like 1792, and within 10 years this edition had appeared. So he certainly would have been familiar with it if he hadn't written it himself. Mm-hmm. I think they said that they changed the key signature also to make it more playable for flute, but should be pretty faithful to the original.
Oh, that's exciting. So, Lisa, we talked a little bit about, you know, kind of going through the journey and then having this opportunity to play with other musicians. Why do you like chamber music so much, I guess, you know, as opposed to playing full? Yeah, what's the difference for you as a player?
Well, you know, when these chamber works were written, you know, a lot of people played in homes, and they played, it was a smaller venue, and it was more opportunity to really show off your playing, and just the opportunity to play together. Guowa Sha puts on a chamber music concert for his students, and you know, they range from ages like 4 to 18, and it's just so exciting to watch, you know, young people love to get together and play together. It's just an opportunity to play in a small group and really bond, you know, as players and, you know, to play together. I coach a lot of those groups too, and it's really fun to even see the young people love chamber music just as much as I do.
I think there's a sense of immediacy when you're playing with just two other people. You can hear each other's parts very well. You can very easily stop and talk about it. You know, you need to be louder, softer, whatever. You missed your entrance. Let's look at each other's parts and see what you're doing or I'm doing or whatever. If you think about it like a boat, that a symphony is a wonderful thing, but it's like a big cruise ship or something. And this is more like, you know, you're on your catamaran, and it's just smaller, much more nimble and agile in some ways. And you certainly, if you make a wrong note, everybody hears it. With a symphony, that's much more of a you're much more a part of a crowd, and it can do extraordinary things having that many voices. But when it's smaller like this, it's just much more connected, I think, to the individual players.
It seems more intimate. I mean, when I go to the chamber concerts, it's more intimate for the listener as well. You know.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's great. It's Saturday and Sunday.
Yes.
We've got an evening performance on Saturday night.
And at the Egan Library.
Great. And then Sunday at 3 p.m. at Northern Lights.
That's right.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Catherine and Lisa. Anything else you wanted to tell us about this upcoming concert?
I don't think so.
I think we've covered all the bases.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for coming on. And I think queued up here we have a little Brahms. And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. We have in the studio some fabulous people here to talk about a really worthy cause coming up. It's called St. Baldrick's, and that's exactly what it sounds like. Sounds like something going on around St. Patrick's Day and being bald. So welcome to the studio here. We have Mark Fuette and his two fabulous kids here, Macy and Malcolm. And then we also have Chris Schwartz here, the general manager of SALT. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so how did St. Baldrick's come about? And actually, why don't we start with what is that?
So St. Baldrick's came about, I apologize how long ago exactly, but it was two guys, and I believe it was around Valentine's Day. They made a bet with each other and said that and they wanted to raise money for cancer. And so they made a bet with each other on putting money on their head and having it shaved to raise $10,000. And by St. Patrick's Day, of that year. So what had happened, St. Patrick's Day came around, and they made over $100,000 on the heads. So they had a good time doing it, and they made so much money, they wanted to keep doing it, and so they've formed the St. Baldrick's Foundation. And
so this is actually a nationwide, actually coordinated effort.
Correct.
So everybody will get shaved kind of around the same day. Is that how that works?
it's close to St. Patrick's Day, yeah, as best as they can. Maybe some people will do it on St. Patrick's Day. Who knows, during the week, you know. So it's a little easier to go into the weekend and then come to work with the head shaved as opposed to going out to lunch and then coming back.
Yeah, and so, right. Will you, so you're the MC of the evening, or is it, how does the day work? And if people want to come get shaved, where can they go, and how does that happen?
Well, downtown Assault is where we're having the event at, and the doors open at 3. We're going to start shaving at 4 o'clock.
Right.
So we start shaving at 4 p.m. The doors open at 3 p.m.
Correct.
And, Chris, can you tell us about Salt? Because this is kind of a new place for people, yes?
New and old. It's formerly Zephyr, but we just officially became Salt last week. We're really excited to host the event. We're honored to be a part of it.
So can anybody just show up to get their heads shaved?
Yeah. I think maybe you need to, you can sign in with Robin Long, who's the contact for the for the event. What's her number? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, what you can do is you go on to stbaldricks.org. You can sign up there. You can get people to come and put bids on your head and have them shaved off, have your head shaved and stuff like that. Or you can show up the day of the event, and we will have people there that will have computers there. We can get on to stbaldricks.org and get you signed up and that. So there's quite a few ways that you can do it, or just come on down and have a great time with all of us. My daughter over here, she's going to have her hair cut. She's not going to get it shaved off. Her mother put the kibosh on that.
She told me that she wants to, but her mom won't let her do that.
Maybe you can get a good cut that day anyway. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm still a little confused with how. So people can actually like put a pledge on. So if somebody said, "Okay, Shona, you're going bald. Here's mm-hmm. 10 grand." Mm-hmm. Like that's
almost
kind of how it works.
Like a concept of a walkathon.
Got
without
it.
Walking the miles, but just getting your head shaved. And in fact, at the restaurant last night, we had a donation. I'm getting my head shaved as well.
Mm.
It's going to look great.
You look good with the shaved head.
It's going to look good. You can leave the beard. I'll
leave the beard for sure. The local chapter of the Teamsters donated $1,000 because I'm getting my head shaved. And they donated it at the restaurant, and we were really, really excited about it.
Wow, the Teamsters. Yeah. They're all about your head being shaved. I love that, Chris.
Well, they must think I'm going to look great. I don't know.
The other thing is we do have women that come and have their head shaved. And I don't know the exact number right now, but I think we're at 7 or 8 females that are going to come and have their head shaved.
And 65 total so far.
Oh,
65
really?
People total getting their head shaved.
And so have people been working on their pledges up to date right now? Or
mm-hmm.
Correct, yeah. You can get pledged the day of, or people have been running around. I'm going to throw out a name, Hunter Cameron. He is a first grader, I believe. He's been out. He's gotten pledges from people here in town. You can go onto the website. You'll find him on there. You can pledge under him. The same thing as my kids, and as soon as he's all signed up, you know, you'll be able to go onto the website and find him. And it's very easy to go on there and give donations to the people on there, your credit card on there, and then it's a safe site and everything. And
that's great. And so as far as that day, so you've got all your
mm-hmm.
pledges, but people can still just kind of walk in mm-hmm. and say, you know, I love that person is getting their
mm-hmm.
head shaved. I had no idea. Here's $1,000.
And just enjoy the day. I mean, we're going to have a menu they can order off of, food. There's beer donated by Alaskan Brewery. And so they can enjoy food, drink. There's a full bar there now. And a portion of the proceeds for the food will also go to St. Baldrick's. So even by buying food or buying wine or whatever they, you know, whatever you want to enjoy, you are donating to St. Baldrick's.
And St. Baldrick's, and what is their, who do they give their, so it's to funds for cancer research and...
For childhood cancer research,
mm-hmm.
and all the money goes to the childhood cancer research. Last year, we had money given to the state of Alaska up in Anchorage to Providence Hospital, and so there was money donated and given for the cancer research up north. So all the money that they make does go back into the cancer research.
That's great. And where can people, so they get more information on this website, and can you give that website information one more time?
You betcha. It's stbaldricks.org. Is that right, Macy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Stbaldricks.org. Great. So, Macy, are you nervous about getting your haircut? Or?
No, I did it last year.
Did you go bald last year?
Like, no, 2 years ago. And, no... my mom still didn't allow me.
I'm taking it your mom doesn't go bald then for the cause.
No.
She has beautiful long hair, so she's very brave.
Yes, you do have beautiful long hair.
I've been growing my hair out since I cut it, and I haven't cut it since.
Ah, good thinking, good thinking. Well, that's very cool. And so, Chris, how do you feel about having, well, lots of hair over your brand-new restaurant?
We're going to try to keep it as far away from the food as possible. So we're going to have to move some tables around. They're going to build a stage so that it's kind of up and it's visible to everybody.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to see it from the loft area as well as from the whole dining room. But we're not that worried about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So definitely look for people around town saying, hey, are you getting your head shaved? And that's this Saturday, right?
Yes.
Correct, yeah.
And doors are at?
Three.
And the shaving begins at 4.
4 o'clock, mm-hmm. Right. Zephyr, it's a great place. We've been in there. We've had parties there before and stuff, and there's a lot of room. And I don't think there's a bad seat in the house. Once we get it all set up, you should be able to see everything once we get going.
Have you ever been, you know, somebody's been right up to the razor and they're just like, no, I can't.
It's the first cut where you go, I can't.
Right, yeah. Right.
We got to finish
it's
this now.
It's too late at that point.
Yeah. Oh, well, nice. What a wonderful cause. And I love to see, actually, after this event, I love to see all the, oh, you must have been in St. Baldrick.
Mm-hmm. There'll be a lot of us walking around town.
Yeah, that's very cool. Well, thank you so very much. And you can check it out on the website. And, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And we are going right head into Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 13th of March, 2014. It's the birthday of the astronomer Percival Lowell, born in Boston, 1855, who in the 1890s became fascinated with the planet Mars. The astronomer Schiaparelli had discovered what appeared to be canals on the planet, and Percival Lowell believed that those canals offered proof of intelligent life on Mars. So he built himself an observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona, and looked at Mars. And even though scientists remained skeptical about that, Lowell's vision of intelligent life on Mars did lead to a great deal of science fiction on that very subject. It's the birthday of the poet George Sipharis, born in Smyrna, Asia Minor, in 1900, wrote in Greek lyrical poems that encompassed the great history of Greece and its mythical legacy. It was on this day, 1891, Henrik Ibsen's play Ghosts opened in London, a play that included mention of incest and sexually transmitted diseases. Ibsen wrote in Act Two of the play, I almost think we're all of us ghosts. It's not only what we have invited from our father and mother that walks in us. It's all sorts of dead ideas and lifeless old beliefs which have no vitality, but they cling to us all the same, and we can't get rid of them. We are one and all so pitifully afraid of the light. And it's the birthday of Janet Flanner, the journalist born in Indianapolis, 1892, whose letter from Paris appeared in the New Yorker magazine for 50 years, every 2 weeks, over the pen name Genet. She also wrote many profiles of Hitler, Queen Mary, Isadora Duncan, Matisse, Picasso, Edith Wharton, and Thomas Mann. Janet Flanner, who said, "I act as a sponge, I soak it up and squeeze it out in ink every 2 weeks." Here's a poem for today by Wendell Berry, one in a series of poems entitled Sabbaths. I know I am getting old, and I say so, but I don't think of myself as an old man. I think of myself as a young man with unforeseen debilities. Time is neither young nor old, but simply new, always counting, the only apocalypse. And the clouds, no mere measure or geometry, no cubism can account for clouds or satisfactorily for bodies. There is no science for this, or art either. Even the old body is new. Who has known it before? And no sooner new than gone, to be replaced by a body yet older and again new. The clouds are rarely absent from our sky over this humid valley, and there is a sycamore that I watch as growing on the riverbank, it forecloses the horizon like the years of an old man. And you, who are as old almost as I am, I love as I loved you young, except that old I am astonished at such a possibility and am duly grateful. A poem by Wendell Berry from his collection Leaving, published by Counterpoint and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry App. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, March 13th. It's a little bit after 3:30 p.m. And here in the studio, I have with me author Don Reardon. And he's here in town to do some readings, do a workshop, all that kind of stuff, which sounds great. Welcome to the studio.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure. So you actually, you've come here to in support of a book. The book is actually called The Raven's Gift, and it was a Washington Post notable for 2013. And it's interesting because you said it has, you know, it's been published, but it's the first release in this country.
Yeah, it's as a raven, it kind of flew around the world a little bit before it could come here in the U.S. It started in Canada and then New Zealand, Australia, France, and then finally the U.S. after three or four years. Yeah.
Oh, really? So what's the? How does that path work? That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's
You're a crazy, frustrating
path. Yeah. I don't know. I guess the publishing world here in the U.S. wasn't quite ready for it or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Canadians and everyone else seemed to like it. And basically, the interest in Alaska is what brought it here, brought it home.
Oh, got it. So you're actually, you live in Anchorage, but you grew up outside of Bethel?
Yeah, yep. I grew up in Bethel in a couple of the villages along the Kuskokwim River, and then went to college in Fairbanks, went back and taught in the bush, and then now teach at UAA and live there in the big city.
Yeah. And so is The Raven's Gift, can you talk a little bit about what this book is about?
Yeah, sure. It's set out in Southwest Alaska, and it's sort of post-apocalyptic, but also pre-apocalyptic and apocalyptic. So it's got kind of those three time frames of a pandemic hitting Alaska and people just trying to survive. So it's a love story and a survival story, essentially.
Wow. So it's a full-on novel.
It's a novel, yeah. Yeah.
And is it one of your first novels, or have you written quite a few?
It's my first one published. Yeah, so it's my debut novel. The first couple attempts didn't take, so this one did, yeah.
Oh, wow. How awesome. And so you're also part of this group called 49 Writers. You're actually the board president for this organization. And I was hoping that you could, because I see 49 Writers do some really cool stuff all over, but I actually don't know what it is.
I'm the president, and I don't know either. I'm just kidding.
No. Oh, great. We'll be in the dark.
No, we started 3 or 4 years ago. It kind of started with a blog, and the whole idea was to create community for a literary community in Alaska, and not just in Anchorage, statewide. And so it's to support writers and to build readership and to support young writers and kind of writers at all levels. And that's kind of our mission. And so it's just really taken off, like bigger than we could ever imagine. A lot of interest and a lot of support and from the community and from writers and from fans of the various Alaskan writers. And so it's kind of, we started sort of at the perfect time as all of these Alaskan authors are kind of finally getting some real press and publication around the country.
So is the 49 Writers kind of group mission is to, for advocacy, and there's also workshops and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of it is just building community for writers and for the community, if that makes any sense. It's, writing can be kind of a lonely pursuit, and so initially it was just to get the writers connected so we could kind of have our own workshops for each other and get the community involved, and then also start to foster that a kind of a community of literacy and readership.
So you'll be reading this week, yes?
Yeah, yeah. We have kind of a reading at COPA for our members tonight, and then I have the workshop on Saturday. Tomorrow I'm reading in Haines. I have a reading in Haines, and that's kind of what we're up to this go around. And we have, it's kind of great. We just started really getting a bunch of Juno members, and so that's what this, I'm kind of down for that, to meet those Juno members and read to them, and mostly just show my gratitude for their support. And we have two new board members from here, Katrina Pearson, who's with Taku Graphics and Shorefast Editions, and Joan Pardes. We have two Juno board members now, which is really exciting.
Yeah. So how do you get involved with 49 Writers if you wanted to be?
If you wanted to be, the best place to start would be 49writingcenter.org, or just Google 49 Writers, and you're going to have our website and our blog. Our blog's really awesome. It's one of our best resources. We have great writers from all over the state posting 5 days a week with all kinds of just great stuff to read about writing, and also just people sharing their writing.
And is this event tonight is open for to the public, or?
It's mostly a members only thing, but I think we're not going to turn anybody away.
Right, because if you happen to just be getting coffee at COPA.
Yeah, just say you're my friend and just come on in. You're all my friends.
And so you'll be reading actually from The Raven's Gift and also some new things?
Yeah, I think I'll read a little bit from The Raven's Gift, and then I might throw in a couple poems, and then I might read a little from my new book, which is doing the same frustrating thing, getting started in French first. So it's going to come out in France, and it's called Moving Salmon Bay. It's about a village that's moving because of climate change, and it's has no home in the U.S. yet, but I might share a little bit of that because I like to hear what people think.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very topical, especially for where we are.
Yeah, sadly yeah. Topical. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you kind of discover, I like to hear how artists have discovered their art. When did you kind of fall into writing?
It probably happened about the summer of second grade when I read The Shining.
Ah, it's old Stephen King.
Yeah, yes. So second grade, I read a book I should not have read. And at the same time, we lived out in the village of Akyak, and I was just enamored with the culture that I was living in and the scary stories, and could see across the river part of a village that had been abandoned, and And so I was just, I loved scary stories at the time and kind of was living my own scary story. So from then, I just wanted to write stuff that scared people. I've advanced a little beyond that, I hope, but I still like to scare people. There's some scary stuff in The Raven's Gift.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a big Stephen King. Love to be scared. It's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Makes me feel alive, yeah. So this workshop on Saturday, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. It's from 1 to 4 at the UAS Egan Library, and it's about creating conflicted characters. You know, in a good story, you have a character who's in conflict, and so I'm going to help anyone who's interested. We still have some space available on the 49 Writing Center blog. You can check that out and register, and it's free to UAS students. But I'll just be helping people understand how to make a character that's complicated and conflicted. And we'll be having some fun. I love teaching writing, and so I like sharing what I know.
So you are a writing teacher also at UAA?
Yeah. I teach writing at UAA and then teach workshops for the 49 Writers too.
Mm-hmm. So the 49 Writers blog, what's the website address for folks out there who are interested?
Let's see. For our main website, it's 49writers.org.
Okay.
And then you can link off our blog from there.
Yeah, I've read the blog. It's fascinating, you know, just to hear.
It's one of those things where it's where the internet, it's internet at its best, you know, free. You know, like really great stuff for free from some of Alaska's best writers.
Yeah. Well, great. So tonight there's the COPA for the 49 Writers. If you want to get involved in that group, you could probably go check it out.
You could become a member now.
That's right. You could member now. You can check out their website. And then also that workshop again is at the UAS Egan Library at 1 p.m.
1 to 4 on Saturday, yep.
And you need to register for that.
Yeah.
Online. And a great opportunity to just practice.
Yeah, it'd be really great if anyone wants to show up.
Well, great. Thank you so much. It's lovely to talk to you. And The Raven's Gift, it's actually, can you get it in town?
Yeah, I think you could get it at most bookstores around now.
Yeah.
It's available.
Yeah. Cool. So check it out at Hearthside Books. You could probably find that there. Yeah. And
yeah.
Are you going to be doing any signing while you're in town?
I don't have anything planned. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm happy to sign books when people have them, though. And
yeah.
You could read the first chapter on my website at donreardon.com, too, for free.
Oh, perfect.
Or on Amazon.
Great. Well, Don Reardon, thank you so much. A pleasure.
Hey, thank you so much, and thanks to All Southeast for this tour. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, that's right, because you're going on tour.
Yeah, midway through it.
Yeah, so you've been to Haines. Are you going to Haines tomorrow?
Going to Haines tomorrow. I was in Sitka yesterday, and then I'll be back here on Saturday.
Yeah. It's perfect Southeast weather for you, too. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And here's a little bit of Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. We're hearing the sound of a male hummingbird. When naturalist A.R. Annans wrote, "Birds are flowers flying, and flowers are perched birds," he may have had hummingbirds in mind. Their eye-catching iridescence is caused by tiny droplets of oil within their feathers. These droplets break up the sun's rays to create dazzling colors. One hummingbird commonly seen west of the Rockies is the rufous hummingbird. East of the Rockies, you'll see the ruby throat. The hummingbird is the only bird that can truly hover. It manages this by flapping its wings 20 to 80 times a second. Here's the sound of those wings. It can fly straight up and down, backwards and forwards, or upside down, and up to 75 miles an hour. But don't worry, it won't run into you. This bird can slow down from 25 miles an hour to a dead stop in a space no longer than your index finger. And even if it did collide with something, it isn't likely to cause much damage. This mighty puffball weighs less than 2 dimes. Before we go, this note from the male rufous hummingbird. To To learn more, buzz on over to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Support for this program comes from Art Matters, providing 25 years of custom framing services for prints, photos, and much more, plus an on-site gallery showcasing Alaskan prints and posters. More information at 789-4370.
Hey y'all, this is Harrison B. I'd like to invite you to join me on March 27th for a live television broadcast recording at KTOO featuring my brand of progressive American soul. Come be a part of the new series, Alaska Originals, which will air on 360 North statewide television and KRNN, and brought to you by Alaskan Brewing and the Aurora Project. Tickets are available at KTOO.org, the station, and at the door. Again, that's March 27th at KTOO. Doors are at 6:30, and the show will start right at 7. Hope I see y'all there.
Tonight on 360 North, watch the BBC World News at 7 and Alaska Weather at 7:30. Then it's Rain Country Reflections at 8, followed by Alaska Magazine Television at 8:30. At 9, join Ann Sechrist for a look into Alaska's judicial system on AARP Alaska. The Aviators is next at 9:30, and Gavel Alaska is back at 10. It's a great way to look at Alaska tonight on 360 North and 360North.org.
And welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. Today is Thursday, March 13th. It's about 3:45. Tune in tomorrow at Friday at 3 for a Juno Afternoon. We'll get an update on Friday's Sound and Motion presentation, and that's actually at the University of Alaska Southeast. Check out that Sound and Motion series. It's really awesome. They've been doing some great stuff. I've heard the Poetry Slam out there, and tomorrow is the Wishjian Dance Group, so you can get out for that. Check that out. Also, Sammy Burroughs will be here to talk about his tribute to Tom Waits at the Gold Town Theater, and that's just going to be killer. I'm a huge Tom Waits fan, and I can't wait to see what Sammy's cooked up over there. Kathy Connor will be this week's featured speaker for the Fireside Lecture at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, and she'll be talking about ancient trees. And actually, those Fireside Lecture series, they happen every Friday night, and they are quite a good time. It's very cozy out there, and Glacier, it's quite beautiful. Also, Robert Cohen will be here to talk about the KRNN Spotlight Concert Series, a tribute to Blue Note Records. And when I see that Robert Cohen is playing, well, I'm not going to lie. I just go straight there. He's just wonderful. So that's fabulous, the KRNN Spotlight Concert Series, and that will be happening tomorrow. You'll hear about that on Friday on a Juno Afternoon. And in the studio with me, I have the lovely and talented Catherine Hatch. Hi, how are you?
A little out of breath. Always running over here with this calendar hot off the press.
Well, I love that it's hot off the press. That's wonderful.
Breaking news, everyone. Art's in town.
That's right. So we did talk to some fabulous people today on air about upcoming things. We talked about the Juno Symphonies Weekend Showcase.
Oh, good.
We talked about St. Baldrick's, which I hadn't, you know, I didn't really know what that was about. I'm really glad that
yeah,
I do.
I've got that on my calendar, too, and it's not arts related, but it's I just put it on there because it's... Who doesn't want to watch people get shaved? Hello.
I know, right? It's a dream come
true.
For a
good cause. Here in cancer.
Yeah. We talked to Don Reardon, who's actually doing, he wrote a book called The Raven's Gift, and he's here to work on some writing with local Juno residents. So we've had quite a day already.
For the 49 Writers Club, Don?
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. And that's actually free to students for UAS. I'm sure you mentioned that. For the rest of us, it's going to be $50, but if you're a UAS student, there's no reason not to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I love, Catherine, that you're in here for Arts Up. I love it. Welcome. So what do we have going on this week? Because there's always so much going on in Juneau in the arts.
It's true,
realm.
And there's so much theater this whole month. This weekend will be the last run of Patricia Jones's one-woman musical, Mother Jones in Heaven. And I feel like I've sold a million tickets to it, which is crazy because the Silver Bow Backroom only holds 62 people, so...
Yeah, well, it's Patricia Hull, and if you haven't seen her work, she's just a very talented actor and an amazing singer, so this is a great opportunity to really check that out. So, yeah, Backroom of the Silver Bow, it's the final weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And it's open seating, incentive to get there early would be Silverbow's Wine Bar. Just grab a glass and then sneak into the front row there.
Oh, I think there's a show tonight as well, yes?
Is there Thursday?
Yeah.
Then there sure is.
Perfect.
Yep. And you might learn a thing or two as well, because I didn't know that Mother Jones was one of the most dangerous women in history, and now I know about it through song and dance, so that's the best way to learn. It really sticks with you when it rhymes. Cool. We do have some deadlines this weekend that I want to talk about just super briefly. Well, it's not entertaining, but it could lead to entertainment if you get funding for your project. The Catalyst grants are due this Saturday, March 15th. We do this every quarter. It's just small, well, up to $500 grants for upcoming artists who might need a little bit of help getting their community-oriented art across. So apply for that on our website, jack.org, get all the info. And if you miss this deadline, there's another one June 15th, like I said, every 3 months. So that's good. And then tomorrow, AWARE actually had a new scholarship this month. It's the Arts and Media Scholarship Contest for teens. And I know it's tomorrow, but it's arts and media, and teens are just grow up with all that stuff, so I feel like you could slap something together,
call
make it,
a
really
day.
Cool looking, yeah. Much better than I would do in a whole week, and apply for that as well at the Juneau Public Library. So that's that. More theater. Of course, you all know about Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, Perseverance Theater. Tonight is actually going to be the last pay-as-you-can performance, so if you want to go to that but are on a tight budget, come tonight.
And it's a UAS night as well, so if you're a UAS student, get out there. There's a talk back after the show, too, with the actors. It'll be really cool.
Nice. And tomorrow, it's going to be same time, same place, 7:30. But at 6 p.m., if you're 21 and over, you can go to Alaska Brewing Co.'s Beer Friday at the Phoenix Second Stage in the same building and taste all of their new Alaska Rough Draft and seasonal brews if you're a Perseverance Theater audience. So
that's right. Jalapeno IPA. That's all I'm saying.
That's going to make,
done.
That's
done
gonna make
done.
It hot. Cat on a hot roof.
Oh, nice. Nice there.
So
like, I like what you did there, Catherine.
Otherwise, you got to go see the Rivals. They're actually having their pay-as-you-can tonight as well. So if you want to see a play, don't want to see it with a bunch of UAS students, go see that one instead. Surprise songs in there is what I've been hearing.
And it's really funny.
Exactly. If you are interested in independent film and are interested in local independent film, then you might want to go down to the Gold Town this weekend. They'll have different viewing times for the world debut of Space Trekker Bruce, which is a locally produced indie sci-fi comedy film. Space Trekker Bruce, not his real name, but I just won't even identify him. It's been spending the last 6 years and $10,000 making this movie. You might be in it. You wouldn't even know because it's been filmed right here. And it's just that doesn't happen in every town, and that doesn't happen every day in Juneau. And you just want to kind of celebrate it and go out and see it and support that kind of thing.
Yeah, and Mike Moss, a very talented musician, did the music for that. I've heard a song or two. Very, very funny and lots of fun.
So do that this weekend. I said to my boyfriend it'd be a very cool man date. He could take all of his man friends.
I don't know if dudes do that.
I wish they would, though. Because I got lady friends to hang out with at theater, and they could go do this instead. Otherwise, we have spring break right around the corner. I don't know if you've realized this, but if you want to keep your kids out of the house and into art and don't want them sleeping in late, there's so many opportunities for them next week to get involved. The Canvas is throwing two different classes, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, so in theory you could even sign them up for both. The morning one is called From Brushes to Birds. It's targeted at ages 7 to 11, and it's springtime, the birds are out. You're going to be drawing them, painting them, just checking them out, and most importantly, not being at home. That's only $90 for the whole week, including all of your supplies, so amazing deal. Their afternoon class is from lighting to landscapes, and that's for ages 9 and above. Kind of a similar thing, only instead of focusing on birds, you're focusing on painting and drawing landscapes and the different light that we have here in Juneau. Again, same price, $90 for the whole week, so check that out at the Canvas. The City Museum always does great stuff for kids on holiday break. This time, the Juneau Explorers are exploring museums and exhibition spaces in our town, which is a little bit funny because we just said goodbye to the Alaska State Museum. So they are going to be talking a little bit about the upcoming SLAM project, but they're also going to go see the City Museum and a few other museums I didn't even know we had, like there's a Juneau time capsule, apparently.
Yeah, totally. Isn't that neat?
Yeah, they're going to be able to go check that out. And that one is going to be $180 for the week or $36 a day. Pick one of the days and have the kids do that. That one is from 12:30 to 5 p.m. almost at noon 30. That's an afternoon one, so they can still sleep in. It is their holiday, but then go check out some museums. Monday is also St. Patrick's Day.
Monday is St. Patrick's Day?
I think so. So get out of your black clothes and wear green.
I know. I'm ridiculous. I'm like a goth girl. So, I will put some green on.
There's lots of celebrating for that over the weekend. There's going to be live Irish dance music at the Alaskan. I think that's Saturday night. The Real Tunes are going to be dancing it up over there. So you got to be 21 and over, but go and do that.
Wait, who's that band? Who's that?
No idea, but they do traditional Irish dance music. Actually, no, here it is. Chris Pankey, Henry Hopkins, and Andy Ferguson. So starting at 9:30 on Saturday.
That's fun.
And something you don't hear every day, traditional Irish dance music. And this is the weekend to hear it for sure. Otherwise, Monday night at 6:30, I think there are still a few tickets left to the St. Patrick's Swayze dinner over at the Rookery. 5 courses, $50. That one's going to be a fun one. They always are. And yeah, there's a different twist to St. Patrick's Day if you go into the Patrick Swayze angle.
Do you have to dress up like one of Patrick Swayze's character?
You should, obviously. You should definitely do. My favorite is Tu Wong Fu. So if you want to drag queen it up, I mean, Juno kind of has a drag queen fever right now, I feel like. Anyway, from Wearable Arts to the Forays next month coming on with the Femme Fatale, this might be another event you could squeeze in there.
What's Patrick Swayze's character from Dirty Dancing? Do you remember his name?
I just kept calling him Baby. Is that not?
That's her name. Nobody puts Baby in a corner.
Yeah.
She was in the corner. Swayze was like, let's go dance.
The teacher. All right.
I can't remember his name either. Johnny. I think it was Johnny.
So easy.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we'll be playing all the songs from that there, so go and eat the stew and sing the songs along with us at the Rookery. What else? Tuesday evening, 6 p.m., Alaska Design Forum, part of their Bling series. Will Alsop is an award-winning architect and designer, and he's going to be giving a talk over at the Gold Town. That's $10 general admission or $5 for students at the door. One thing that I haven't talked about, which is happening this weekend, is Bacon Fest. The only reason I'm not bringing it up so much is because it has sold out. Yesterday afternoon, officially sold out. There is going to be a wait list. You'll have to email the guy in charge. That info is on our calendar, his email address. But stop calling us. We don't have tickets. No, it's over, guys.
You know, I think that's maybe where the dudes get together, and maybe
that could be the mandate.
That, yeah, I mean, it's got bacon.
Definitely. Yeah, and that's going to have the bacon. Rumblefish. There's drinking and there's bacon. There's probably bacon drinks because I feel like the IPA jalapeno, you could do something with that.
Yeah, there's. I've made a bacon martini before. Yeah, so that's
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely.
And then I think I was saying that this is the last weekend to see Mother Jones, but Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and The Rivals will continue on this week. So if you miss it this weekend, they're back on starting Thursday and then through Sunday as usual. So that is pretty much how we're going to be getting into the arts this weekend.
That sounds pretty great. And I'm wondering what is coming, you know, the Jack has been doing so much lately. I mean, we just had Poetry Out Loud on Tuesday, you know, through the statewide poetry of all the high school students in the state coming
totally,
down
right
here.
Right here at the 360 studio, which was kind of fun.
Was totally awesome. And, you know, Wearable Art is finished, and then the...
you think we can take a break now, is that...
I'm just wondering...
Absolutely not. We've got it planned for the Flying Karamazov Brothers. Those are coming in 2 weeks. We can hardly wait. It's been hilarious, really, trying to get their set list together, because these guys are jugglers, but it's not just like we'll line up a bunch of tennis balls. They need hundreds of cardboard boxes. In fact, we're looking for volunteers if you want to come and help us put together these 100 boxes the day that they get here. They also need all sorts of specialty shaving cream, certain sorts of smoky machines. We need dry ice, and we need it bad, and there's no place to get it in town. So you've got
Safeway.
A tip there. But Safeway only has it when the fishing season starts, so we have to, like, I don't know, twist some arms to get it. We're figuring that out, but if we need all of these things, it can only be an awesome show. Like, they're coming with their own fire extinguishers, so we got that down. Like, there's so many things.
Because we don't have any of those here.
We also need a ukulele, and they might break it, so I don't know. They're going to throw it around. It's going to be... Who doesn't want to see all that?
I'm going. I'm Flying Karamazov Brothers. I am there. Are the tickets sold out?
No, we've got plenty of tickets left. I think we've sold, like, 400. But it's at JDHS, so we can fit more than that. So come on down and see it. It's going to be fun for the whole family. Flying Karamazov Brothers, if you've been around longer than I have in Juneau, you might remember they came a long time ago, just at the beginning of the Juneau Arts Council, which, as we know, is 40 years old this past year. So a little bit older than myself. So I missed it when they came around the first time, and I don't want to miss it this time. So check that out. You'll be talking about it for years to come.
Perfect. I'm so excited. Catherine, thank you so much. Where can everybody get this information?
On our website, jahc, that's jahc.org.
You could also check it out at KTOO's website. We're actually linked to
Jahc
calendar. I know. It's amazing. KTOO.org. Catherine, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for all the arts information.
Have a good weekend, y'all.
And this is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Ock Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
In 2013, we had roughly at this time, round numbers, about 1,000 calls. This year, it's over 5,200 calls.